Blog Talk Radio.
Mark Stoat's music is a cross between rock, jazz, folk, blues, metal, and some pop thrown in for fun. The Dahlonega, Georgia native credits his unique sound from music legends ranging from Bach, Radiohead, Ed Sheeran, and even Tool. The multi-talented 22-year-old's eclectic taste in music also shows itself in the instruments he plays, the piano, guitar, bass, and cajon. He is literally a one-man band. Put on your seatbelt and get ready for a joyride. Mark Stoat is the new artist to keep your eye on in 2014 and beyond.
Oh, I feel like I've known you forever. Oh.
He really wants you to know that he is tackling this as a career and he is interested in traveling to any location so you can hear him live. Visit his website, www.markstoatsofficial.com, and you can follow him on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
I said a thousand times that you look just fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Yvonne Mason, and once again, you are joining us tonight on my show, Off the Chain. And those of you who have been with me since day one and have listened to my shows understand that sometimes it can really go off the chain. If you missed the show last night, it is in archives. The industrial band by the name of Cypher out of London, Ontario, was my guest, and it was absolutely amazing. You don't want to miss this wonderful band. Tonight's guest is another friend of mine who is also an author, who has been on this journey with me for going on 9-10 years.
Yes.
We met many years ago when we all, a group of us, got burned by a nefarious publisher who we do not mention his name because karma will get him. But she has been with me, and we have helped each other, and I have watched her grow, and it's been an interesting journey. And her name is Fran Orenstein, and she is the founder of Sunwriter, a multifaceted writing project. And this award-winning poet and writer wrote her very first poem when she was 8 years old. She submitted a short story to a magazine at 12 years old and has continued to write professionally and academically and is the published author of fiction novels for, are you ready, ladies and gentlemen, children, tweens, teens, adults, and also poetry. She also gives workshops and hands-on presentations for publishing and free verse poetry. Dr. Orenstein has won awards for her poetry and short stories from the Florida Poetry Society and the American Association of University Women. She has been a member of a number of national and local organizations, including Sisters in Crime, National League of American Pen Women, the Florida and Arizona Poet Society, the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, writing newsletters for several of these groups. Now, just as a little history about my friend Fran, she grew up in New York, in Brooklyn, and the Bronx, and she had a childhood that was filled with culture and outstanding educational opportunities. She raised 3 beautiful children, and now is the proud granny of 4 grandchildren. She believes that volunteerism is as important part of living as a well-rounded life. She was a teacher, a magazine editor, a writer, a counselor. She managed women and children's programs, including child care, violence prevention, gender equality, and disabilities, and was an officer with the New Jersey AmeriCorps. She has presented workshops and papers at national and international conferences and wrote and managed grants, created, edited, and wrote numerous newsletters for government and community organizations, and she wrote political speeches and promotional materials. Not only that, this fine young woman has a bachelor's degree in early childhood education, a master's degree in counseling psychology, and a doctorate degree in child and youth studies. Hence the title, Doctor. Retired from the stresses of this workplace, she writes novels and award-winning short stories and poetry and then gives presentations and workshops on writing prose and poetry. Are y'all interested yet? Because I know I am. And with that being said, we are going to welcome Dr. Fran Orenstein. Welcome, Fran.
Well, thank you so much, Yvonne. Your words are so kind.
They're so true.
I was sure I was listening about somebody else.
No, it's all you, my friend, all you.
Well, thank you. And we do go back a long way, yes, indeed.
Yes, we do. And when we first started, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we first started, were you just doing children's book point, or had you gone into the – I remember one of the first books I remember is The Ghost Under Third Base.
Yeah, that has been yes, I was doing children's books originally. That is really my favorite age group. I love children's mysteries. I always loved children's mysteries from the time I was little. This may age me, but my first experience was the Bobbsey Twins, and then, of course, Nancy Drew, which is still going strong. So I've always loved mysteries, and my mother was a mystery reader, so I think I grew up at the library in the mystery section. But, yes, you're right, it was. And the Ghost Under Third Base is now in its fourth iteration, I must say.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I think it's had four publishers or three publishers already. But now it is a series. It's in fact, we were talking earlier about my going into rewrite and editing for a fourth book in the series, which publishers has been bugging me to have for the past year, and I'm finally hoping to get it to her by the end of this month or the beginning of next month. So that is a tween, middle grade series for mysteries with a single ongoing character through the series.
And the other one that I remember was about the young girl who thought she was too fat, Fat Girls from Outer Space.
Yes, yes, definitely. I love that book. That is a very special book to me.
Explain that book to our listening audience, because this, ladies and gentlemen, this book has a beautiful life's lesson in it. And I want Fran to explain this book and how it came to be.
Well, it came to be because I was a fat child. And I was, well, at that time, they didn't call anything bullying. They called it teasing, making fun of. It was humiliation. You know, it's a terrible thing for a child to be different and to have to grow up with people calling you names and making fun of you and being embarrassed in gym class and, you know, in other places where you can't compete. And it has gotten worse today because of the obsession with thin. Everything has to be thin, thin, thin. And Fat Girls is simply a story of a 12-year-old going, and she becomes 13 in the book, who I named, her name is Frederica. I call her Freddie. And she's a fat girl. And she has thin friends, you know, but there is one boy in her school, her middle school, who bullies her, makes her life miserable. And it's how she takes a special talent that she has, meets two other girls who are also fat girls, and they have that talent, and the three of them get together, and they become famous in the town. And so they manage to overcome their physical problems by using their talents. And this does not necessarily mean it should be only read by fat girls or fat boys, because very skinny kids have the same problem, a kid with something, anything different about their body.
That's true.
And you know how kids are at that age, you know, the zit.
The
end. Life has just ended, right?
Life as we know it is gone. We'll never be the same. Yes,
the bad hair day, you know, oh, my God, that's the end of the world. Or my hair is curly and theirs is straight, or it's mine is red and I have freckles, as one of her friends says, you know. So,
this book could be cathartic for a child.
Yes, because it deals with bullying. It deals with standing up for yourself, but it also deals with learning how to overcome and grow and go beyond that bullying.
Does it deal with learning how to accept yourself and understand that you are enough just the way you are?
It does, because she's able to use her talent to realize that she's a brilliant, wonderful, talented girl. And what she sees in the mirror is not her. It's what's inside.
That makes perfect sense to me, because we all, I know for years and years and years, I didn't feel worthy. I didn't feel like I was good enough for anything. And
mm-hmm.
It took me a long time to understand I'm okay just the way I am. And those that refuse to accept me for the way I am, maybe they have flaws that they're not comfortable with, so it's easier to bully someone than it is just to say, okay, I've got flaws, you've got flaws, but together we're pretty great. I always wanted to be somebody I wasn't, and in the end I wound up not being true to myself. So Fat Girls from Outer Space is along that same line.
And it's also a matter of coming at it so that anyone who bullies someone and reads this realizes what they might be doing to another person.
Good point.
Because anybody can be bullied, and nowadays you can do it quietly on the net, unfortunately.
That's true.
On the web, whatever you call it.
The thing that we love. Tell me about, because some of these books I didn't even know you had out there, and they
look... Wait, can I make a plug for Fat Girls?
Yes, ma'am.
The publisher also put it out as a graphic novel. It's a great graphic novel. So
excellent.
That's just... Yes, and they're both on sale on Amazon and other online places. So check out what the graphic novel looks like. It's really neat.
So your reader not only gets to read it, they get to visualize it.
Absolutely, yes.
That's perfect.
Yes. Very well done. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I had to throw a plug in there.
No, I'm glad you did, because I did not realize you had put a graphic novel out with that book, because that is a neat, neat little book.
Well, I love this publisher I have for children's books, and she's just great about doing things like this to enhance the books.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. And while we have a break in this, if you want to call in and ask Fran a question, please do. The number is 516-387-1756. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And my guest tonight is the one and only, the wonderful author, Dr. Fran Orenstein. Now, tell me about these new books that I'm ashamed of myself. I did not know that they were out, and I might even have to read them, even though they're kids' books. The Shadow Boy Mysteries.
Is that? That's the segue from the original Ghost Under Third Base. It is now called The Mystery Under Third Base. The second book is The Mystery of the Green Goblin, and the third book is The Mystery of the Stolen Painting. And the fourth book that I am finishing now, I'm finished, but now that I'm working on, honing, is The Mystery in Graham's Attic. So,
and does the same theme run through the entire series?
The same character, the mysterious character, Willie. I'm sorry, the mysterious character, Hubie. And it's a secret how I conceived him. The kids don't know what he is, but he disappears when he can, when he wants to. He reappears. He knows things he shouldn't know. He helps the kids when they need help. He's a little boy. He's a boy. He's their age.
Right.
And it's all for, you know, tween and middle grade age groups. So the kids range from 12 to 13 or 13, yeah. And mostly 12-year-olds. But Hubie appears when the main character in each of the books needs help. When something's going on in the character's life that they can't cope with anymore, Hubie suddenly, mysteriously appears.
And I think he'll be 12 again.
No, you don't.
Because these sound so interesting.
Well, I mean, adults read them. You know, people read them. It's not just, you know, kids who read them. They're not baby books. Do you know what I mean? They're
right.
I don't use baby language in any of my books, so they really have to try for it. But I've had 7- and 8-year-olds read them, and I've had teenagers read them, and I've had adults read them and enjoy them. So it's, even though I say they're tween books, they're really for anybody.
Well, that segues into a question I wanted to ask you. While I was doing my prep work on you and saw all these wonderful things you've accomplished in your life, how has doing these things, for instance, your degrees and your workshops, how have they helped you write stories like this?
A lot. Well, there's a facility for language that you learn when you get an education. There's also, you know, the degrees in psychology and child and youth studies, you know, gives me a knowledge of child development and where children are at certain ages and stages, so I get an idea of that. I also watch some of these programs on television to get an idea of how kids speak, although they're not really speaking the way they normally would on television, but like Ricky, Nicky, Dicky, and Dawn kind of, you know,
right.
Shows like that. And it gives me an insight into what goes on in their heads and how they might behave and react.
So did you know when you were studying your bachelor's degree in early childhood education that it would lead to you writing children's books?
Well, I always knew I was right. I mean, I always wrote. It doesn't matter what I was doing, I was writing. Poetry mostly during those years. But, for example, when I was in my master's program in psych, I took a had to take a class in adolescent pathology or psychology or however you want to term it. And the teacher, the professor, asked the class, and you know, it was a lecture class. He asked us to write a paper on deviance in adolescent deviance. When I thought about that, and I said, you know what, I'm not writing a research paper. So I wrote a short story called The Mutant, which is now published, which we'll talk about another time, is now published, excuse me, in my adult short story book, Dance Macabre. It is a sci-fi story about a boy who's considered a mutant in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And he's considered a deviant. And I'm not going to give it away.
Right.
Well, the professor loved it so much, he made me get up and read the entire story to the lecture class, lecture hall.
Wow.
And told me I should publish it. He gave me an A+. He wanted me to publish it. My son, older son wanted me to publish it, but it took all these years to finally get it into a short story. I thought of making it a full-length novel, and then I said, well, it works so well as a short story, I don't want to ruin it by adding too much. So it is now in Danse Macabre as one of the stories. But that's an example of what I'm talking about. My choice of a bachelor's degree was not my choice. It was Mama's choice.
There you go. And Mama wasn't wrong, apparently.
Well, yes and no. You know, I'd much rather have been digging up the pyramids in Egypt, you know, as an anthropologist, archaeologist, but, you know, that wasn't happening. So
what type of counseling did you do? Was it also with children?
No, 17 was the youngest. I was a vocational rehab counselor for 8 years. I worked with people with disabilities, and I did counseling. I did job placement, follow-up counseling for the job placement, and so on. And then I continued my work with people with disabilities as I moved into other jobs, because I recognize a terrific need, especially in the women's community. So I started a coalition on women and disabilities in New Jersey, which continues to this day. I mean, that was back in the mid-'80s.
And, wow.
They did a lot of legislation and bringing hydraulic tables to doctors' offices and hospitals. You know, can you imagine someone getting out of a wheelchair and trying to get up on a table?
I fight it every time we go to the doctor's office. Yep. My husband's in a scooter, and he can't stand. So, yes, I can relate to that very, very well. It is impossible for him to get up on an exam table.
Well, this group managed to get a sample bed from a hospital in Pennsylvania. They had it brought to New Jersey, and they brought it around to all the hospitals and the doctor's offices and so on. And that's how it got started.
You are an amazing woman, Fran.
Well, I don't know. I just do what I do.
You're an absolute amazing woman. Because down here in Florida, and it's supposed to be one of the most advanced medical fields in the nation, I go to a doctor's office and they'll say, can he stand it? And I look at him and go, really? He can't get up on that table. So if you're going to examine him, you've got to do it in the scooter.
Well, either that or get a hydraulic table. Yes.
That will be my next suggestion.
Well, now you know why I'm living in Arizona and not Florida anymore.
Yes, ma'am. I do. Let's talk a little bit about your teen and young adult books. Again, I did not know these were out there, and they look wonderful.
Well, go ahead.
No, you start. I just open the door. You go ahead and walk through it.
Well, the Book of Mysteries is three novels under one cover. So there are three separate novels in this one book, and they are for younger teens, older tweens. So kids, say 11 to 15. Would like them. They are fantasy adventures, three fantasy adventures, the same characters in each book, two boys from New York City, which where, you know, I grew up, and Tyler and Zach, and their adventures three different fantasy worlds, and I don't want to give it away, but you know, it's a family trait in Tyler's family. They go to his uncle sends him to a disappearing bookstore in Manhattan, and there is a magician who is the bookseller, and through the Book of Mysteries they go on these adventures. and they have to fulfill, you know, fulfill something before they can return, if they can return, because sometimes it gets a little hairy. And so, you know, they're up against wizards and dragons. They're up against mythical beasts like the like centaurs and griffins and hippogriffs having a war. So it's it gets to be it's interesting in each book. You know, they get older in each book, and so by the third book, they're interested in girls. You know, and so in each story, each book has a female, has female characters from the fantasy land.
Do they ever not want to come back?
No. Perfectly happy to come back.
Well, tell me about your historical romance and adventure for teens and young adults. Like the two books that I'm looking at is The Spice Trader's Daughter and The Calling of the Flute. I can't even talk. These both look so interesting.
These are historical romance adventures. The Spice Trader's Daughter takes place between 1685 and 1701, and it's the story of the Huguenots in France who were persecuted and had to escape and run away to, well, a lot of them went to Königsberg, which at that time was Prussia. A lot of them went to the Netherlands, and some of them went to New York and founded cities. Like New Rochelle, New York. Of course, that's a French name. And it's the story of one family, the Dubois family, and several generations, and how the daughter Katie, the second generation, she ends up back in France, and she actually meets Louis XIV. It's very historically correct. And it's she falls in love, and it's how she gets it. Unfortunately, she and her lover, you know, her boy, they weren't lovers, but you know what I mean, are embroiled in political intrigue, and they have to escape for their lives.
Wow.
The second book is based on the story of, loosely, of my grandparents, particularly my grandmother, who was, and it takes place in Lithuania in the turn of the 20th century. So it starts in the late 1800s. My grandmother was a rebel. She rebelled against the religion and, you know, lost her one true love, and became a pariah in the small town that they lived in. It's also the story of persecution by the Russians and the Cossacks, and how they took boys, little boys, into the army, and they were never seen again. And it's her and her brothers escaping, also another escape adventure. Out of Lithuania and to the United States. And a lot of it's true, and all these things did happen. They may not have happened to my family, but they did happen. My grandmother was a rebel, so that part is true. And so that's The Calling of the Flute, because my grandfather was a flutist in Russia.
So what you have done, you have basically taken history and made it interesting to a group of young people who might not necessarily enjoy history, but they learn history through the joy of reading.
Yes, because they are fiction books. I mean, there are people in them, obviously, who actually lived, like Louis XIV lived. You know, he was real. And the kings and queens you know, Louis and the kings and queens of Prussia, and in the Calling of the Flute. And these people actually lived, and a lot of it was historical fact. You know, a friend of mine who probably is listening, I hope, loves to do research, and she did a lot of research for me on some of these books. And I did the rest of the research. And so the books are historically correct, and the places are historically correct, but the stories of, you know, basically, except for my grandmother's little piece there, you know, and my grandfather, basically historical fiction.
I love it.
It didn't happen to somebody who actually, you know, that these things didn't actually happen. Of course they did.
Yeah, I absolutely love it because it gives children an insight into history and they learn without even realizing they're learning, and it will stay with them longer than if they just try to read it out of a history book.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's fiction, that
they don't quite understand or get, they can look up. You know, it's a great way for teachers to. It's a great great learning way for teachers.
Well, I want to back up just a little bit and get you to tell our listening audience that not only do you do tweens, not only do you do teen and young adult, but you have some books even for the little guys, the 8 to 11 range. And these books not only tell a story, but again, in words that these children these ages can understand, they give a life lesson.
Yes, and that is my Amber series. One Amber Too Many, Amber and the Magic Whipped Cream Dress, and the third book that is in the works eventually, I mean, it started. It's a book that has been started called Amber Times 2 or Amber Plus 2. I can't remember the exact title. And it's the story of a 9-year-old girl, Gillian, whose parents are divorced and her father remarries a younger woman. Gillian feels like her father doesn't love her anymore. And I'll just read a little portion of the first page or so.
Yes, absolutely.
Chapter 1, Daddy, the Witch, and the Baby Doll. 1 month after her 9th birthday, Gillian Sandler ran away from home, but she only got as far as the back gate. She watched a lizard dart around the fairy duster bush. Lucky lizard, she said, wish I could run away like you. But I can't eat bugs and sleep under leaves. I have to carry a backpack with peanut butter sandwiches and water and clean underpants. She rolled on over and lay on her back looking up at as the orange sun moved behind the mountain and sank. Not fair. Even the sun can run away. Fiery clouds streaked across the sky as if painted by a giant hand. A cloud that looked like a brontosaurus lumbered past in the wildfire sky. Run fast, brontosaurus, before the fire gets you. Run, wish I could run across the sky. Gilly turned onto her side and curled up tighter, pulling her thin legs beneath her body. The ground was hard and poked painfully against her hip bone. But Gilly didn't care. She wanted to hurt. Pain dulled the awful thoughts that tumbled through her head.
That's powerful.
And what it is she's just found out that her dad is going to remarry. And she is just devastated. But she tries her best to wreck everything, and everything she does backfires. So there's a lot of humor in it, too.
And that's usually what happens when there is a divorce and a remarriage, either on the father's part or the mother's part. The children feel torn. They feel like if they love one, they can't love the other, or the parent doesn't love them because they're so wrapped up in this new relationship. And I think this is just an amazing, amazing series, Fran, because that is a great way to help a child work through something that is that traumatic.
Yes. And in addition, and I've told this to parents who have complained to me about the theme of the stories, these children are now surrounded by divorced families. If their family isn't divorced, their best friends is, or
uh-huh.
their schoolmates are. I mean, we're talking, what, one out of two statistically?
At least.
Yeah. And so why shouldn't the child understand what someone's going through during that time?
And what they're going through.
And what God, why, right?
Yeah, because children don't always understand why they feel the way they feel because, number one, they're too immature, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but they haven't been able to see everything that goes on behind closed doors in a marriage or what happens within the nucleus of the marriage because for many parents just put this face on in front of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So they're rocking
in addition,
along thinking everything's fine, and boom.
Well, children are also, you know, into their own thing. They're, yes, and they don't think about what's going on around them until it hits them.
And then it's a shock.
Yes, yes.
And then it's a double shock when one of the parents says, oh, I'm getting married again, welcome to your new step-parent. And this child is going, what?
Who might only be a couple, not that old, much older, you know.
Right. So this is an excellent, excellent learning tool. I'm telling you, my friend, you have nailed it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You have given parents tools to help their children to succeed. You have given children tools to learn history in a fun-filled and exciting way. You have given children tools to learn how to deal with life, with your mystery series. And you know what? I really believe that it is your insight that you garnered from all the things that you have done during your life that comes out in your stories.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I am very, very tickled and happy because this is amazing. If these parents don't buy these books for their children for Christmas and birthdays and just because, oh my goodness, they're cheating their children out of such wonderful stories.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Introspection, unfortunately, has not been the watchword. It's all quick visual flashes, and that's it. And
well, they got to read. What makes you want to write? What makes you get up in the morning to write?
I just feel compelled. If I have a book that's lying around that I haven't finished or worked on or something, I'll have dreams, symbolic dreams, about unfinished things. Writing has always come very easy to me. I've tried everything. I've tried art. I've done music since I'm seven. But writing just the ideas pop into my head, as though some muse is playing with my brain. And I can do it at any time, anywhere. I don't have to worry about art supplies or people shutting me up about, you know, with the piano. I can just write. And writing is a very easy thing for me to do. Sometimes it scares me because sometimes I can write a book in a month. It just flows right into my head as though someone were writing it, or I was, that's the word I'm looking for, channeled.
That's the word you're looking for, as though you're
yeah.
being channeled. Well, where do you get your ideas?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's something, sometimes it's something I'll hear or I'll read about, but most of the time an idea just pops in my head and I'll develop it. I've got lists of ideas for books that might not even ever happen. But that's why I like short stories, because you can write a lot of those
in a very short time.
Yes, yes. But that's me in writing, and it's been the same way when I wrote from work and when I wrote academically. I have a knack to just be able to sit down and words flow right out.
Do you ever get writer's block?
Oh, yes. For me, I get partway into a novel and I start to hate it. Oh, it's not going right. I'll never figure this out. I can't. It's slow. It's dragging. It's this. It's that. And I'm like, oh, forget it. But I can't let it go. And it takes a while to get past that. It's not that I don't know what to put down. It's just that I feel like, oh, what am I doing this for? It's dragging along. It's monotonous. It's like being stepped on by an elephant's hoof, you know, an elephant's foot.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But if you don't write, don't you feel like you're missing a part of who you are?
I feel guilty.
Yeah.
I feel guilty because I have this gift and I'm not using it.
And they say if we don't use those gifts that we are given by God, we lose them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't be losing your gifts, because I'm going to tell you, this is just absolutely amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, not only does Fran write all these wonderful young people, tween, young adult, teen, children 8 to 11 books, she also writes adult books, which we're going to run out of time in about 15 minutes, and we're going to bring Fran back just to talk about her adult books, because there's enough information here for these children's books that we could probably talk for about 3 more hours.
Oh, don't do that. No.
Do you get bored if you don't have a variety to write about?
Yeah, that's a big thing for me. I get bored with everything. I always get bored. And I'm not a rote person. I wouldn't enjoy doing a major series. Like, there are some authors that can write 20 books about the same characters.
Right.
Different plots. And I can't do that. I don't enjoy that. I don't enjoy just writing in one genre. I like variety.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
But one thing I wanted to mention is I did with him, the previous old publisher from way back.
Mm-hmm.
A book of poetry that was published, and then of course when that happened, the book, you know, was no longer available. But I have redone it, and I have, it's poetry for children. It's a children's poetry book, which is one of the things that really bothers me that people aren't doing anymore. I mean, my children grew up on A Child's Gardener Verses, on all the A.A. Milne poetry books. You know, children's poetry is amazing. So I've added a lot of poems, and my son is a professional Georgia musician, as your introduction talked about somebody. I wrote a song based on one of the poems, and he did an arrangement, and we taped it in his little studio. And so that's also part of this book. But the trouble is finding someone who's willing to take a chance on children's poetry, finding a publisher, is a major.
We may have to put it out there in the netherworld, and the right publisher will come along. Is this song out there anywhere, or is it just part of the book?
I don't know if he put it out on iTunes. I'll have to ask him. No, the song is one of the poems. So I wrote the poem, and then I wrote the music, and he did the arrangement, and he did the piano background, and I sang it, and we taped it in his studio. But I don't remember if it ever went out, if he ever put it up on iTunes.
What I would like for you to do, if you can, or either get your son to do, is send me the MP3. That's the way we send music back and forth now. And I will put it into my queue, and when I have you back on, that will be my introduction song for you on that night.
Okay.
So that people can hear it, and there are other places that your son can load it. One of them is City Baby. One of them is Verbanation, and he can load that song up and charge for it, and people just download the MP3 and they pay 99 cents or a dollar, and we can start promoting that song for you.
Oh, neat. Okay.
See,
yeah,
there's all kinds of ways that we can do, and I can play it on here the night that when we bring you back as the, like, that was my nephew that we did the intro. That's my nephew out of the.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wrote it down. I was going to ask my son if he knows him. So, yeah.
He might, because he plays all up in Dahlonega, and he graduated from Gainesville College with a degree in music.
It's the same kind of music Pete does. That's why I said it. He went to Berklee College of Music. So this is it's the same kind of music he does. That's why.
He might know Mark then.
He might. Is it K or C?
It's a K, M-A-R-K.
Jokes. Okay. Oh, we'll ask him. Or if he's online, he may be listening. I don't know.
He could be. But if he'll get me that MP3, and you can just have him send it to me at my email address, I'll add it to the queue, and then we'll play it, and then we'll discuss it before we discuss. And I'm not going to spoil the next show. People are going to have to tune in with all these other lovely, lovely little books for adults that I don't see them. I'm just turning the page over because we're talking about the children tonight.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
What about telling our listening audience where your books can be found, your website, how people can find you? Because in this technological age, people don't go to bookstores anymore. They use the Internet. I use the Internet for everything. And if they don't know where to find you unless they just stumble upon you, they won't know where you are.
Fine. All my books are on online publishers with Amazon and on Kindle.
Are they on Barnes & Noble and Nook?
Barnes & Noble. I'm sorry. That's what I was looking for. Barnes &
Noble.
That's
quite all right.
If you just look under my name, all the books will come up. And my website is Fran Orenst, www. Fran Orenstein, that's FranOren.com.
Do you
and
have
all the
covers?
Books are in there under books, and also links are in there.
See, there you are in my head, friend. Things don't change in 10 years, do they, my friend? You knew what I was going to ask before I ask it. In your books, in your children's books, are any of these characters based on some of the antics that your children did?
Not really. No, I'm trying to think now. Well, yes, I'm. It is and it isn't. Well, for instance, my son Pete in Pete Orenstein in Georgia, he's a musician, but his instrument is piano. So yes,
mm-hmm.
the piano
hit there, but I also played piano when I was a kid too. But he's a professional at it, so that hit. No, not really. Not really.
So all of these children are your children through your imagination?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do they stay with you all the time?
Some of them do, yes. Freddie does, you know, Fat Girls. She's always in my head because that's what me, that was me. And the mystery books I just love. I just adore that. I love that age group, you know, the tween age group, because they're so open to adventure, and they have this budding awareness of the opposite sex, but yet not. And two of the books have girls in them too, you know, lead character girls as well as boys. And they're moving into a wider variety of genres. You're making discoveries about the world, themselves, everything is changing. You know, their view of the world is widening. So it's exciting to write for that age group. So I like that because, you know, they're pulling away from their parents and they're becoming independent. And that's when, that's when the wars start. So I guess some of the teenage wars, I guess, are in those books. You know, you can't help it if you're a parent, you know, it's going to happen.
That is very true. When they say, I hate you, and you have to say, I love you enough for both of us. I remember those days.
I'll make it out. You know, but we'll see what happens when they say the same thing to them, you know. And realize what a knife they stuck in their parent, you know.
Well, I used to tell my children, when you grow up, I hope you have children that is just like you. And what they failed to, and they laugh at me. Well, what they failed to realize is the curse does work.
My mother used to say to me, I hope you have 10 like you.
The curse works.
The curse worked. I only had 3, but the curse worked. No, I can't say that. I mean, I'm very, despite whatever goes on in our family, you know, family issues, which happens to everybody, I'm very proud of my children. I'm very, very proud, and I'm extremely proud of my grandchildren, and my granddaughter just started college. She's 17.
Congratulations.
To Northwestern University. And, in fact, when we talk about the adults, her picture at the age of 3 is on the cover of Gaia's Gift. So
sweet. So
yes.
She will be forever in perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
You are an excellent grandmother. I ask all of my guests this because I feel like that it is important that they impart a few words of encouragement and wisdom to anyone out there that is looking to live a dream. So for about 3 minutes, if you can, impart your words of wisdom to someone who has a dream but doesn't know if they can live that dream.
The only thing we really have is our dreams. Most of us have not got the financial wherewithal, or sometimes the support to realize our dreams. But you're not going to go anywhere in this world unless you have a dream. And do your level best to make that dream happen. And it may not turn out to be what you originally dreamed, but it doesn't mean it can't be as satisfying as when you dreamed it. As what you really wanted. You know, yeah, I'd like to be on the New York Times bestseller list and, you know, have major New York publisher behind me. But even those authors are struggling now.
Yes,
you
they
see
are.
Them everywhere trying to sell their books. Mm-hmm. What did James Patterson get on TV? He says, I'm going to kill, who's his main character? I'm going to kill him.
Yep.
He said, if you don't buy the book, I'm going to kill him.
I'm going to kill him right off. But that is
so
true.
Yeah, and the publishing world is not what it used to be at all because of the economy and because of the anthrax. I remember all the manuscripts I had out at the time went in the garbage, went in the trash. We didn't have the luxury of emailing manuscripts. Most of the publishers didn't want them that way. They wanted them in snail mail.
Yep.
But they ended up in the trash. And then because of the economy, publishers started eating up other publishers until there were only five or six left. And all the others you hear about are imprints of those five or six. Imprints meaning rewards for editors who get, a good authors and will make a lot of money. They get a special imprint.
And I do have to say that this group of us, ladies and gentlemen, that have been together, and there is a group of us that have been together for about 10 years, we are the ones that broke the ceiling on indie publishing, because we are the ones that made the Internet our friend. We are the ones that said we will control our destiny and we will be heard and we will publish our work. And like Fran says, we may not be on the New York Times bestseller list, but at the end of our day, we can say we do sell our work. We are successful. Am I correct, Fran?
Yeah, and just a dream. Be a published author, that was my dream. I made that dream. It happened. And yes, the reason I have publishers, and I do have three publishers, small publishers, but I have them because I'm not technically able to do it myself. And it's easier for me to have found a small publisher who does a beautiful job publishing my books.
So, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who have followed this show off the chain, every end of every show, I leave you with some advice. And that advice is, if you do not try, you have already failed. To have tried is to have succeeded. And if you allow someone else to steal your dream, then you have failed, because no one can steal your dream without your permission. If you have a dream, it's like Fran says, if you have a dream, you go for that dream, and while you may have to make detours and while you may have to take a different path, the dream should always be in front of you, because you are the only one that can make that dream real. You are the only one that at the end of your life, you have no regrets. You don't go saying, I shoulda, woulda, coulda. We're never too old, and Fran, correct me if I'm wrong, we're never too old to be successful, and we're never too old to make a dream real. Is that a correct statement?
That is absolutely correct, and I have one. As an A personality, I have to have the last word. Never give
up.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we are getting towards the end of our show. Wednesday night, my guest will be my friend Sita McGee, who has her own radio station. She is an entrepreneur. She has her own beauty line. She is also a published author. She is one of 18 children. The night after that, another author friend of mine, Robbie Cox, will be on. So next week is just going to be full to the brim again. Fran, I want to thank you, my dear, dear friend, so much for the honor of being on my show. And we will get you set up for another hour so we can discuss the adult books that I just turned the paper over and not cheating anymore. So thank you, my sweet friend.
Well, thank you, Yvonne, for having me. I really appreciate it. And everybody out there, if you're a writer, good luck and keep going.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, as Fran and I leave you tonight, remember this. None of us get out alive, and we can only defeat ourselves. No one can defeat us. So live, love, laugh, be successful, and be a dreamer. And with that, I will say good evening, until next Wednesday at 8 o'clock Eastern. Thank you again.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Fran.
Good night, Yvonne.